Paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Hail to the summer. Hail to the summer, the season that drives the cold winter away. Hail to the summer. Hail to the summer, light your bonfire. Today is Beltane.
Merry mid, everybody, and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. My guest tonight is Ellen Everett Hopman, and she's here to talk about her new book, The Sacred Herbs of Spring, Magical Healing and Edible Plants to Celebrate Beltane. And since the wheel of the year has turned, and will be turning especially tomorrow, because tomorrow is Beltane, the timing couldn't be any better. Now, Ellen is a master herbalist and a lay homeopath who's been a druidic initiate since 1984. She's a founding member of the Order of the White Auric and Archdruidess of the Tribe of the Oak. She was a former professor at the Grey School of Wizardry and a member of the Grey Council of Mages and Sages, as well as being an author of books including Secret Medicines from Your Garden, The Sacred Herbs of Samhain, and if you missed Ellen's last visit on the show, that Samhain book is the one we talked about. And actually, you can find it on the Stirring the Cauldron YouTube channel, which is Stirring the Cauldron Para-X. It's up there for listening. All right. Now, if you have any comments or questions for Ellen, please send them to me in private chat here at paraxradionetwork.com. And Ellen, hi, and thank you for writing a new book that gave me the chance to ask you back on the show.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me on this very special night.
Yes, and I was going to get to that because, you know, first of all, the book is to celebrate Beltane and May Day, as some people know it. And but tonight, I mean, and in the book, actually, you write about customs from Britain and Ireland and Scotland and many more things, including Germany. And the German customs do coincide with tonight again because it's Beltane Eve, April 30th, and this is Walpurgisnacht. And so I think we can start out by, why don't we talk a little bit about what tonight is and what it symbolizes and where how it came to be.
Well, I was actually, that's exactly what I was thinking. And I found the pages in the book, May Eve in Germany. And there's just a few paragraphs. Would it be okay if I read those?
Sure.
Okay, so Walpurgisnacht, that's how you say it.
Walpurgisnacht
is the night when the witches fly in from all over Germany on a goat, pitchfork, or broomstick to a summit in the Harz Mountains to dance around bonfires. The place where they convene is called Hexentanzplatz, which means the dancing place of the witches, at Blocksberg Hill, which is a high peak often shrouded in clouds. In pre-Christian times, these spring rituals were joyful festivals. In later Christian times, they morphed into rites designed to scare away evil spirits and witches and the forces of cold weather, snow, and darkness that were trying to stop the Queen of Spring from entering the land. Loud noise was said to do the trick. So starting at twilight, men and boys would bang away on pots and pans and shoot gunfire into the sky, chanting loudly and banging boards against houses added to the cacophony. Huge bonfires were lit to keep the witches away. Offerings of bread, butter, and honey were left in the fields as offerings for phantom hounds. Cowbells were blessed and stable doors locked and hung with three crosses for extra protection. Billy goats and broomsticks had to be hidden so that the witches would not steal them and ride them. Socks were left in a cross formation on the children's beds. Pentagrams were placed over entrances, and salt was spread along thresholds. Rue and St. John's wort were burned to protect the house from sorcery. Old brooms and household objects were burned in bonfires, as were straw men, symbolic of bad luck, sickness, and disease. Children gathered bunches of juniper, hawthorn, ash, and elder to hang around the house and barn as protective charms. At dawn, the women would bathe their faces in dew from a hawthorn tree. So that should sound somewhat familiar to people who are used to the English traditions and Irish, which has to do with bathing your face in the dew of the hawthorn tree.
Yeah.
So you should do that tomorrow morning.
I got to find a hawthorn tree really quick.
Everybody needs to have a hawthorn tree because, you know, actually it's not really Beltane until the hawthorn blooms.
Ah.
That's how they, in the old days, you know, they didn't have the internet, they didn't have radio, they didn't have television, they didn't have computers. Mm-hmm. They had hawthorn trees. And when the hawthorn blooms, the hawthorn is not going to bloom until it's warm enough. Mm-hmm. The hawthorn knows when it's warm. And then it's warm enough to send your cows up to the hills. And that's really what Beltane is all about. It's about celebrating that change when the herds go up to the hills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it's sow and they come down. That's the opposite.
See, that's neat. But see, when you're talking about that, when it gets warm enough for the trees to bloom, I mean, I have, sometime in California anyway, we have tricky weather. You know, we could have 100 one day and, you know, down to 50, which we think is below zero, the next. But every year lately, the last few years, I have my pink jasmine. And I wait until spring and the first thing. And we had so much rain and everything. And it was for a very long time. And then all of a sudden, we had one day or 2 days of warm weather. Mm-hmm. The jasmine went, woohoo, they all bloomed. The next day, it rained. All the blossoms got knocked off. And that was the end of that for this year. It was like,
well, you know, maybe you need to, I mean, California obviously is a completely different bioregion.
Yes.
You know, it's not Germany, it's not Ireland. So maybe that's your Beltane symbol. I mean, you need to pay attention. That could be the signal for you that mm-hmm. tells you when it's spring. You know, when the jasmine blooms. It's worth it to pay attention to that because these yeah. customs, you know, they might be appropriate for Europe. They're certainly appropriate for New England. We're called New England for a reason, you know. The same plants pretty much grow here that grow in England and Scotland and Ireland. They're all here. Everybody needs to be very familiar with the animals and the plants of their own bioregion and the water sources, the rivers, you know, where does your water come from, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be your That could be your thing.
That could be my hawthorn tree, in a sense.
Exactly.
That's a good idea. Yeah, well, it's a lot better than having to plant one. But I do like hawthorn trees, so that goes without saying. But also, I think people may not know what Beltane is, a lot of people that are listening in. And, you know, of course, it's also known as May Day to some people. But it is the turning of the wheel. And it's, you know, you talk in the book about the plants, the customs, food and drink, and May Day rituals across many cultures and that honor the god and goddesses. But some people might need a little bit of history on the Sabbath, too. Can you dig that up for me?
Okay, well, you know, as you mentioned, thank you for mentioning it, the book that came out previously was called The Sacred Herbs of Samhain. Mm-hmm. And these two books are kind of bookends of each other, The Sacred Herbs of Samhain and then The Sacred Herbs of Spring, because in the Celtic calendar, they only had two seasons. They had summer and they had winter. And the dark half of the year and the light half of the year. So Samhain is the beginning of the dark half of the year. The Altena, or Beltane, is the beginning of the light half of the year. And they're both portals between the seasons. And what that means is you're moving from one form of existence. For example, we've been living through the winter. Of course, winter where I am in Massachusetts is a whole other deal from where you are, I think. But you're used to winter. You've been wearing your winter clothes, and it's been dark, and the days have been short, and the nights have been long, and the animals have been hibernating, and there's no leaves on the trees. So that's one form of existence. So along comes Beltane, or May Day, and all of a sudden you're now moving into the light half of the year when it's going to be completely different. Now there are going to be leaves on the trees. The animals are going to be out and about doing their thing, reproducing. The fields are going to be growing. The sun is going to be out. The days are going to be longer. The nights are going to be shorter. You know, so it's a different world. So as you're moving from one existence to the other, it's a time of chaos. It's a time of liminality. It's a time of change. And when you have that kind of chaotic energy going on, it means that the walls between the worlds become thinner. And our culture, our modern American culture, still remembers Samhain. We call it Halloween, which is English, Hallowed Eve, or Halloween. And we still remember that, and we still remember that there's ghosts and goblins and spirits and things roaming around. But we've pretty much forgotten Beltane or May Day, but May Day is just as powerful a spirit night as Samhain. Mm-hmm. So you can get in touch with the fairies, you can get in touch with the ancestors, with the deities, gods, goddesses, you know, whatever is on the other side or on the astral plane that you want to get in touch with. Tonight is the night, or in the next couple of nights. Mm-hmm. It's just as powerful as Halloween. The difference is that at this time of year, a very powerful thing to do is to find a blooming tree, whether it's an elder or a hawthorn or an apple tree, you know, something that's in full bloom, and sleep under it or hang out under it, and you'll see the fairies. You know, mm-hmm. That's the best chance to see the fairies.
Yes.
As opposed to Halloween when you're in the dark, you know,
yeah,
different.
Yeah, exactly. And you just made me laugh when you were talking about the winter and how, you know, you have winter clothes. My mind wanders a bit. So the minute you said that, I thought, okay, well, we have three seasons here. We have short sleeves, long sleeves, and no sleeves. That's how we define seasons. And yeah, so anyway, sorry, I digress. But let's talk a little bit. You were talking about the cattle moving up, and that reminded me of the Beltane fires and where they drove the cattle through the smoke. So, and Beltane fires are still in many places a very important element, and the word Beltane actually means bright fire. But what is the significance of that fire?
Okay, well, first of all, the movement of the animals, you're out west. If you were in Yosemite, for example, at this time, you would see the same thing. You would see the animals starting to move up into the hills.
Mm-hmm.
That's a universal thing. You know, as the days get longer, the bison or whatever they've got there will be moving up. The elk, you know, they'll be moving up into the hills. At Salwan, mm-hmm. they'll be coming down. So the cows moving, that's a very natural thing to happen. But, of course, farmers were controlling it because they owned the herds, you know. Mm-hmm. So cows, this is all, goes back to Indo-European cosmology. Cows are lunar animals because they're filled with liquid, which we call milk. But you could think of it in Indo-European terms as soma, which is sacred liquid.
Mm-hmm.
And the moon is associated with the movement of the tides and water and liquid, right? So cows are lunar animals. In Celtic thinking, if you want to create magic, if you want to create manifestation, you bring fire and water together. And actually, if you go into a Hindu temple, Hinduism is the opposite end of the Indo-European spectrum. The Celtic religion, the old Celtic religion and the old Hindu religion were basically the same religion. One was in the east, one was in the west, but it's the same religion. If you go into a Hindu temple, even today, you'll find a sacred well of water, you'll find a perpetual fire.
Mm.
Because where fire and water come together, you have the greatest possibility for magic, change, transformation, you know. So you take these lunar animals, these cows, and you pass them between two fires. And the fires are supposed to be close enough that a white cow will have her fur singed brown. So that's pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
And you drive them through as magical purification on their way up into the hills. And then at Lunasa, you have horses, which are solar animals. They're animals of fire, and you drive those through water. So it's the same idea that they would drive the horses at kind of a ritual bath. They had to be driven through a river or a pond or a stream, but again, it's fire and water coming together. And then, I mean, a lot of Scottish tradition, the first person to get water from the well on May Day morning, when the light first hits the water, that's very magical. Why? Because it's the sun hitting the water. Again, it's the fire combining with the water. And so people would compete to get there first, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was reading and I forgot it, and I really should know this, but the Beltane fires, it starts from one fire and you're supposed to extinguish all other fires. I mean, this is in the days when
that's a whole other thing. Yeah.
It's
a huge subject. I mean, Beltane is a very important religious holiday, just like Samhain, you know,
mm-hmm.
and so all the fires would be put out. We're talking about Ireland now. This is Irish.
Yeah.
And except for one fire, which was at Ushna or Ishna, which is the exact geographic center of Ireland, which was the home of the Archdruid, there was always a perpetual fire there. And runners would come from all the provinces all around Ireland with mm-hmm. torches, kind of like the Olympic Games. And they would run and they would dip their torch into that fire, into the perpetual fire, and they would carry the fire back to their villages, and everybody had doused the fire in their home, and then they would relight their home fires from that central fire. So it's interesting because, you know, you had a lot of competition and raiding and you know, people competing with each other and stealing each other's cows and, you know, all that was going on. But at the same time, on a spiritual level, they all had the same fire. It all came from the same central place.
Mm-hmm.
And again, fire and water. For the Celts, they thought the whole universe was made of fire and water. And in Scandinavia, they say fire and ice, you know, that the earth was created from fire and ice. I don't know if it's true anymore, but back in the day, they had more ice than they had water. I think they don't have as much now as they used to. But so for the Celts, it was fire and water. And those were the basic building blocks of creation. So people had the same sacred fire. And, you know, every home had a fire hearth. And it was usually it was the job of the woman of the house. So she almost became become a priestess, because she would pray over the fire first thing in the morning, get it going again, and then at night she would s'more the fire, she would pray over it again, and she would cover the peat or the ashes, the embers, with just enough so that they would stay lit all night. And, you know, there were just a lot of prayers that went along with that. It's a big subject, but that's another thing. I mean, if you're practicing any kind of a Celtic tradition, fire and water are the two big things. And if you're going to do a ceremony, there's three things you have to have. You have to have water, some place to make water offerings. And if you live in the country, it's going to be a stream, a lake, a pond, or it could be the ocean. Or if you live in the city, it could be a cauldron of water. And you're going to have a fire source. And again, if you're in the country, it's going to be a bonfire, or it's going to be a fireplace, or candles. If you live in an apartment, you might have to have candles inside of a cauldron. I've done that. But you have to have those. And then the third thing you have to have is a sacred tree. And if you're living in an apartment, you know, it could be something in a pot, or it could be a branch, a tree branch. But in the Hindu tradition, they have a pole. So they have fire, water, and pole. And I really believe that in ancient times, that pole would have been a tree. But, you know, in the temple, it's a pole. So they have fire, water, and pole. And there's just a lot of meaning to that. When you make offerings to water, they sink down. So they go down to the underworld. They go to the sea realm, where the fairies are, where the ancestors are. When you make offerings to fire, the offerings go up to the sky realm, which is the home of the gods, the goddesses and the gods. And then the tree or the pole is the intermediary, because trees have roots that go down to the underworld and branches that go up to the sky world. And it could also be a large standing stone. That's another thing you could have, is a stone. But the point is that you go between the worlds, underworld to upper world. Yeah, does that make sense?
No, it does. It makes great sense. And as you said, it is kind of complicated. It's got a whole lot of layers, like onions. And that's why
and
I'm going to...
It's very different from Wicca. I mean, what most pagans practice today is very modern, you know, and people think that they're doing some ancient thing, but they're really not. It's very modern, because Wicca was really only invented in the 1930s, you know, by Gerald Gardner. Not that that invalidates it in any way, because obviously it works for a lot of people, but if you're a druid, as I am, or a Celtic Reconstructionist druid, you try to learn the old meaning of things and the old way of organizing ritual, and it's just different.
I think that's the way. I mean, I've always kind of gone to that instead of the modern things. I've always, you know, gone back and studied and learned the history and the different ways, because I think that's important. Anybody can create something new, but I kind of like, you know, they all say, well, everything old is new again. Well, no, not if you change it up, it isn't. So, no, I definitely agree. It's good to practice what the ancestors did. Okay, so in the book, also speaking of fires and stuff, you've got a chapter about sacred woods for the Beltane fires, which to me, if I tried to do it, I would probably be like naming the seven dwarfs. I'd leave one out. So what are the sacred woods?
Okay, sacred woods for the Beltane fires. There again, this goes back to actual Celtic tradition. Mm-hmm. There are 9 sacred woods, and this comes from an old Scottish verse. Choose willow of the streams, choose hazel of the rocks, choose alder of the marshes, choose birch of the waterfalls, choose ash of the shade, choose the yew of resilience, choose the elm of the brae, choose the oak of the sun. And each of these trees, and I've written a couple of books, I have to plug here, but
of course.
I have a couple of books. One is called The Druid's Herbal of Sacred Tree Medicine. The other one is called Tree Medicine, Tree Magic, where each of those trees gets a whole chapter.
Mm.
Again, because there's medicine, food, lore, magic, spirituality, you know, connected with each of those. And, I mean, I can just go down the list here. Willow is called the tree sacred to poets because it was the tree that they made the harps out of traditionally. And if you've ever spent time with an old willow, you'll notice that they naturally form kind of like a V shape,
mm-hmm.
and in their branches. So if you have that V shape, all you have to do is put a crossbar and you've got a harp, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
And then there's a whole other thing where the willow, they say the poets love the little cage, meaning that an old willow that's hanging down, if you've ever spent time with one, you can actually walk under the branches, and the branches are hanging down kind of like the bars of a cage,
mm-hmm.
but it's also like a womb in there. So the poet goes under the willow to incubate a poem, and the willow is feminine. It's a feminine tree. It's associated mm-hmm. with the moon. And you incubate your poem, and maybe you have your willow harp with you, and the branches coming down, it's like you're in a cage, and then mm-hmm. you come out, you emerge when you've incubated the poem, and then you have a poem. So that's willow. Hazel of the rocks. Hazels are associated with wisdom, the salmon of wisdom. That's a whole story. But hazelnuts were a very important source of carbohydrate. Oak, acorns, and hazelnuts were probably the most important forms of carbohydrate. But the nut is hard on the outside, and it's soft on the inside, and it represents the brain of the druid, or the head of the druid,
wow.
which, you know, we still say it's a hard nut to crack, or, you know, hard on the outside, but the brain on the inside.
Yeah.
So hazel and wisdom. Alder of the marshes. Alder is a tree that grows right on the edge of water. It has to have its feet wet. Willow is the same way. Willow has to have its feet wet. But alder has to be by water, and what that means is that it doesn't rot. So it's a very useful wood to use for things like bridges and pilings and building houses in damp areas, you know, things like that. It won't rot, and it also will help to bind the edges of a wound together. It's very astringent,
mm-hmm.
but spiritually, I think of alder, you know that song, Bridge Over Troubled Water?
Mm-hmm.
That's how I think of alder. It's kind of like it's this bridge. It's not going to collapse under you. It's just going to help you cross whatever trouble you have. Choose the birch of the waterfalls. Birch, of course, is the tree of new beginnings, the lady of the woods. Most cultures think of it as a feminine tree, although there are some cultures that do think of it as masculine, but most cultures it's feminine. And it's called the tree of new beginnings because when land is cleared, or like after the ice ages or any kind of major disruption to land, birch is one of the first things that appears. And in fact, as the forest becomes more mature, the birch gradually dies out. It disappears. But it's also very cleansing. All the birches, except for the white birch, they all have this beautiful wintergreen scent. And if you drink the tea, it clears fat out of your blood in the spring, and you can use it to clean the house. You can use it to clean your oven, you know, because it breaks down fat. Do you want me to go ahead?
I have a question about birch. I was going to bring it up, but we've got to take a break. So we'll be back in 2 minutes, and I will ask you my birch question.
Okay.
You've been warned.
Are you haunted by shadow people in the middle of the night?
Do you secretly love all things creepy and spooky, enjoying ghost stories and horror fiction from the best storytellers?
Do you have a true ghost experience you want to share, but no one will believe you?
If yes, listen to the professionals on What Are You Afraid of? Horror Paranormal Show, Friday nights at 9 p.m. on ParaX Radio and at www.whatareyouafraidofpodcast.com.
What are you afraid of on ParaX?
Our creepy and demented hosts are on call to provide you with all your spooky needs with true ghost stories, interviews, indie music, and new horror fiction.
We are ready to scare you. ParaX.
Hey everyone, it's Marla. If you like tonight's episode of Stirring the Cauldron and the archive podcast as well, take a look at the show's YouTube channel and check out the dozens of shows that are there just waiting to be heard. New shows are added each week, and while you're there, why not subscribe? It's free. And if you click on that tiny little bell icon at the top of the page, you'll be notified when new shows are available. Just go to youtube.com and then type in Stirring the Cauldron ParaX, and the link will appear. Just like magic.
Hey there. I don't know if you've heard, but there's a great new radio show on ParaX. Two hosts, 1 hour, and too much fun. Stephanie and Heidi not only talk about the latest goings-on in the supernatural worlds, they live it. They want to hear from you. They want to help you understand and guide you. And they want you to tune in. So, grab a friend or come alone to gather around that metaphysical table with Heidi and Stephanie. If you're interested in the worlds of the unseen, tune in to The Gathering Radio Show, Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern on ParaX Radio.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Welcome back, and my guest tonight is Ellen Everett Hopman, and we're talking about her latest book, The Sacred Herbs of Spring. Now, I had a birch question I wanted to talk about, and I've got two chat room questions in the pile. So let me ask the birch question, and then we'll get to theirs. Okay, so maypoles were often made of birch, and as maypoles are phallic in nature and a symbol of potency of the god, and the ring of the flowers at the top of the maypole represent the fertile goddess. And then when they're dancing around it and weaving the ribbons, that represents the spirit, the spiral of life and the union of the god and the goddess. Just throwing that in. But is there a particular reason that you know of why birch was kind of the favored wood for maypoles?
In Wales and other areas, first of all, they did not cut down the tree.
Mm-hmm.
They used a live tree, and it always kind of makes me sad when I see the trees being cut down to make maypoles, because you don't have to do that if you have a nice birch tree. That's a good question. I mean, it is a tree of purification.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a tree of new beginnings, mm-hmm. So that makes it very appropriate for the beginning of summer, right?
True.
And it's a goddess tree.
Mm-hmm.
So I would think those would be the reasons.
Those are very good reasons for it, after all.
But you don't have to kill a birch tree. You can just trim off the bottom branches and make a live maple. And just so people know, that whole maple thing, that's English. It's not particularly Celtic, I mean, except for Wales, maybe. I think Wales got it from England, though. In Ireland, for example, they had a May bush, which is a whole different thing. You didn't have a maypole. Maypoles were brought in when the English came in, but the May bush is a whole other thing. At this time of year, and here in New England this is true too, right now daffodils, forsythia, marsh marigold, all these yellow things are blooming here. Same thing in Ireland. It's primroses, which are yellow. All these yellow plants, and they're all solar plants. They're symbolic of the sun. So you would have a bush, like a small hawthorn tree, for example, and you would decorate it with yellow flowers. They would also decorate it with eggshells that were dyed yellow. If you use onion skins, you can make a yellow dye for your eggshells. And it's funny because now you see in my area around Easter, I noticed that houses are starting to have Easter egg trees. And then last week they took them all down because they figured the Easter season was over, right? Whereas, you know, in the pagan tradition, you would just be putting it up tonight, you know?
And a lot of people are putting up wishing trees, too.
So, and hanging, you can hang ribbons from it, different colored ribbons. But yellow was the original, very traditional thing to honor the sun.
It's, you know, one of the, I just posted a picture of your book cover in the chat room, and everybody likes it. Just so you know, and somebody just asked about wishing trees, and I'm not going to go into cat now, but if you go over to my website and go to my blog, I did a whole blog the other day on wishing trees. So it's marlabrooks.com. Click on the blog and you'll find out all about wishing trees. So yeah, those are always fun. And one thing, talking about the beautiful cover and the book in the chat room, your book, like the Samhain book, has so many beautiful illustrations in it again. And it's amazingly nice to just flip through that book and even look at the pictures. I mean, reading it is better, but looking at the pictures is really nice. I mean, so I just had to mention that to you.
Well, I always ask Inner Traditions, the publisher, to use the old botanical prints. And I love those because they have beautiful colors, and then they will show you the plant in bloom, but they will also often show you the roots and the seeds and, you know, the flower and the leaf, which is something that you're not going to get in a photograph usually. So often they're better than photographs, I think.
They are. They're really stunning. I really like them.
Yeah.
Okay, so one question from the chat room, and it was for anybody in the chat room, anybody who knows, but are box elder trees the same as elder trees?
Well, there's boxwood. Are they confusing boxwood and elder?
I don't know, but now that you asked, it'll probably show up in chat. So, yeah, we'll find out.
I know elder trees quite well, and I know boxwood, but I don't know a box elder.
Okay. Well, let's see if we get a comment and we can pick it up. But the second question is from Ceiling Cat. She says, are indigenous trees and herbs more powerful?
I'm sorry?
Are indigenous trees and herbs
more powerful?
Yeah.
Probably yes, I would say so. Unless it's something that you grew in your own garden and you put a lot of your own energy into it, you know, and you nurtured it from the time it was a seed, something like that, and you had a personal relationship with it, and you brought, it was a plant from somewhere else, maybe in that case you could work with it magically. But in general, I would say indigenous plants, That's why I was suggesting, for example, that the flowering jasmine for you might be more powerful than the hawthorn would be, you know, because in your area, hawthorn might bloom in February or something, which would totally throw off the whole calendar, you know. but, yeah, there's certain days of the year that have particular power because there's a certain energy, like tonight. Tonight is the night. If you have a rowan tree, if you have a mountain ash, tonight is the night to gather wood from the mountain ash if you want to work with it magically, you know. You can gather it any time of year, but tonight is the night when, I mean, if you're really going to be working with it, this is the night. And, so you're working with the spirit of the land that you're living on.
Okay. She just did a little digging about Box Elder, and it's Acer Negundo, the Box Elder maple. So Manitoba maple or ash leaf maple. It's a species of maple native to North America. So it's it's a maple tree. And so we learned stuff.
I like it. It's not an elder. It's a maple. Maple has a very interesting energy. Maples, especially here in New England, they turn color in the fall, and they have obviously a very sweet sap, especially the sugar maple. And maples actually like people. They're interesting that way. They get along with people. They can survive in polluted cities, and that's why they grow often, you know, along roads. They do fine that way. And because they know how to turn color in the fall, they are considered artistic trees, so that if you want to make paintbrushes or musical instruments, drums, things like that, something artistic, or if you wanted to build a house or a studio where you wanted to have a lot of art going on, maple would be a good choice because maples understand creativity, they understand color, they understand self-expression. That's the spirit of the maple.
Nice. All right, let's tell everybody a little bit about what's in the book. So it's written in three parts. And first is kind of useful primers that deal with Celtic cosmology, fairies and helpful spirits and herbal preparations. But part two is the magical herbs of Beltane. And that is very, very comprehensive. In part three, you talk about traditions, rites, and the foods of Beltane. And I want to talk a little bit about the herb section because, as I said, very comprehensive. And as I started looking through the chapters, I saw some wonderfully delicious and not so run-of-the-mill recipes included. And since most people I know are kind of foodies at heart, this is a really major bonus. Where did you dig up all those wonderful recipes?
Well, one of the things I wanted to do was talk about, when I talk about any herb, I talked about the medicinal properties, I talked about the magical uses, and then I tried to find a recipe. And the whole idea was kitchen witchery. And so through the book I'll say, you know, if you're a kitchen witch, because what you can do is you can find a food and learn its magical properties and then incorporate it into a meal. That's a kind of spell work, and the person that you're serving it to doesn't even necessarily have to know what you're doing, you know, but there are certain things, you know, like strawberries and cherries or love and beans for abundance, and, you know, and then there's very traditional down south on New Year's, you're supposed to serve a meal that has cornbread, beans, and greens, like collards or kale, something like that, usually collards. So what that means is you have the cornbread, which is gold, which is for gold. You have the beans, black-eyed peas, beans, which is coins. And then you have the greens, which is chard or kale, something like that, poke, anything green. And that's money, that's, you know. So that's how you ensure abundance, you know, for the new year. So what I tried to do was I tried to show how to use each herb or food for magic, you know.
Mm-hmm. And for good taste, because...
Sorry?
Go ahead. No,
I was just going to say, I picked things of the spring, because in the book, The Sacred Herbs of Samhain, I kind of do the same thing, only more with roots and grains and things that are ready at Halloween, you know, in the fall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that makes good sense. But, you know, here, I mean, I just opened the book again because I didn't get to look at every single recipe. But there's something here that just caught my eye that is so simple, and I would have never thought about it. And it's mint ice cubes. Who would ever think of mint ice cubes? Obviously, a lot of people but me. You know, something so simple that you just put mint leaves in an ice cube tray and make ice, and then it's good for cold teas and fruit punch and lemonade. I don't know why that just kind of caught my eye, and I thought, whoa, like,
I have a lot about edible flowers. Any edible flowers mm-hmm. can go into ice cubes. And then you can float the ice cubes in drinks, or you can put them in the chalice, you know, if you're doing a ritual. It'd be really nice to do that.
Yeah, I mean, easy things. But then, I mean, there are so many other ones that are kind of interesting, like black locust flower soft drink, which is nice. Mm-hmm. And a classic Waldorf salad, but it's got some really neat things in it. And... You know, I mean, I can't find the ones that right the second that I was looking at, and I should have bookmarked them because I'm going to try to make them anyway. But that's really kind of a really nice touch because there's just so much in the book. And I also love the chapter on herbs for connecting with other realms, higher beings and visions. And there was lots of lore that I never knew, like I didn't know, and maybe I'm crawling out from under a rock, I didn't know that apples were associated with the other world and that beans were associated often with death, rebirth, and the underworld. Mm-hmm. But tell us about the apple, because there's something about the passport to enter,
Avalon,
to get into the
other world. Avalon. Avalon is Avaloch, which is the place of apples. And that's what modern pagans would call the summerland. It's a place where the apples are always blooming, but they always have fruit. And so when Arthur dies, you know, King Arthur, where does he go? He goes to the apple place because they couldn't think of anything more amazing than apples. I mean, we as Europeans or European Americans, we always have this idea of Adam and Eve taking a bite of an apple, right? But if you go back and look at the Bible, there's no apple in the Bible. That was just an assumption because in ancient times, the only sweet things they had honey, they had mm-hmm. apples, they had cherries, and they had plums, and I think that was it. So apples were the equivalent of chocolate candy or something, you know. They couldn't think of anything more marvelous, you know, than a sweet apple. And so apples, I mean, there's a lot to apples, of course. You cut an apple in half and you see a pentagram, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you meditate on an apple, what is an apple? An apple is this big, round, sweet, cushion, moist, delicious, beautiful cushion with tiny little seeds in the center. And the seeds are the babies. And the apples are cocooning or surrounding the seeds with this amazing sweetness. You know, very few plants do that. Most seeds are just, you know, surrounded by green something, you know, they're in a pod or something. But apples, they just surround their babies with this cushion of sweet. So again, it's just an example of love. And apples don't grow very high. They like to be close to the ground because they like to be trimmed. They actually do better when they're trimmed. So back in the day, they would have been trimmed by the deer. Deer love apples. But, you know, the animals would have chewed on the tree, or humans would have picked the apples, but that the tree always stays close to the ground so that it's in relationship with the animals and the people, and mm-hmm. it drops its sweet fruit, you know. So apples are associated with love.
Okay. And the other thing I'll just touch on, because it was interesting to me, was when we got to the beans, you know, I was kind of wondering why the English belief says that the dead are said to frequent bean fields of all places. Mm-hmm. But yep. I do like that the one that made me chuckle was, to protect oneself from sorcery, it is suggested that you hold a bean in your mouth and spit it out the moment you see an ill-intentioned witch. So, yeah, now, you know, I mean, looks aren't everything. How would you know? You know, you might spit it out to a really nice witch and poke her eye out or something. I don't know. But that,
well,
I love
the association of beans with the dead, that's an ancient thing, because if you break a bean open, like take a kidney bean and cut it in half, open it up, and you'll see a little tiny plant embryo mm-hmm. inside the bean.
So I
do talk about this in the book, because I talk about Italian, you know, ancient Roman customs, mm-hmm. talk about the Floralia, for example. But at weddings, at funerals, in Roman tradition especially, they would always serve beans, mm-hmm. because each bean was thought of as an embryo. And it was, if you wanted your ancestors to reincarnate within your family line, it's a good idea to eat beans, because they can creep into the embryo that's inside the bean, and then presumably you swallow it and then give birth to it or something. But they're always associated with rebirth and reincarnation. Mm-hmm.
And now we know that they're also incorporated in spitting at witches, so this is good to know.
That wouldn't be very nice.
Well, it wouldn't, but, you know, folklore, lore, people do that. All right, so there are also, for those of you who don't know, chapters on herbs for fairies, elves, and spirit, herbs for magic and mysteries, for protection, for purification, for courage and clarity, love, fertility, abundance, and edible Beltane herbs and magic flowers and magic rituals. And let's not forget all the folk and fairy and stuff, sacred herbs, gods and goddesses. I mean, there's poems and incantations. I could go on for an hour just talking about the book, what's in the book. But did I overlook anything that you'd like to bring up that we need to talk about?
I do have ritual suggestions also. I have both in the sacred herbs of Samhain, I do the same thing. And in the sacred herbs of spring, I have a goddess ritual and a god ritual. So mm-hmm. the goddess ritual for the spring book is the Floralia. That's a Greek, and she was called Chloris in Greece and Flora in Rome. Mm-hmm. But I focus on her. And then for the god, I have the Dagda, who's mm-hmm. a Celtic god. But I try to give suggestions, like in the Sacred Herbs of Samhain, I had the Morrigan for mm-hmm. this goddess, and now I forget who I had for the god. Oh, that's terrible.
You've written a lot of books. You can't be blamed
for
forgetting.
I've got like 16 books at this point. Yeah. But I'm just looking, in the Sacred Herbs of Samhain, in the back of that book, I have a list of holidays. And I give suggestions on what offerings to make. So I'm looking at Beltane, May Day. This is in the Sacred Herbs of Samhain. It says, make offerings to a sacred fire of dried herbs, whiskey, and butter, or ghee. Offer butter or milk to rocks. I often pour milk on the rocks. Make offerings of apple blossoms, rose flowers, or anything in bloom, to stones, trees, gardens, and fields. Pour mead in the fields and on the stones. Make and offer incense to the fire. Make offerings of flowers and fruits to water and wells. Leave a blessing for the trees. Offer May wine, milk, and honey for the land spirits. So those are things you can do tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I should mention, my website is EllenEverettHauptman.com, and I'm also on Facebook. I have an author page on Facebook. If you contact me tomorrow's the first. Saturday the 2nd, I keep thinking. Saturday the 2nd, we're doing an online ritual. Mm. My group, Tribe of the Oak, we're also at tribeoftheoak.com. We're doing online rituals for the duration of the pandemic, the current pandemic,
oh, wow,
as a form of service for the community. We've been doing online rituals for 2 years now, but we decided to kind of go public with them because we know that a lot of people can't get out and circle with their groups, you know, mm-hmm. so we're just offering that. So if you're interested, the 2nd, which is Saturday, at 12 noon Eastern, which would be 9 a.m. in California, I think,
mm-hmm. Yep.
We will be doing an online ritual, which sincere seekers are invited to attend. Please be sincere, because we'll throw you out if you're not. I mean, we have to be very strict. But if you contact me, if you're really interested, I can tell you how to get involved with that. And it's a beautiful, it's about a two-hour ceremony that we do. We have poetry, we have music, we do healing work. It's really quite powerful.
Sounds wonderful, and thank you for doing that. I mean, so many people, I have to say, so many people are jumping in and doing things like that. During this time of chaos, for lack of a better word. And you know, it's blessings to all of you that do, seriously. And so thank you for that. And so you gave out your website, and that's a really interesting place to go. People should check that out as well. And we do have to go, speaking of going. So thank you for being my guest tonight. Oh, one more question. Would it be a spoiler if I asked you if you had another couple of books planned, perhaps, like Lunasa and, you know, so,
I'm working on the sacred herbs of Yule and winter solstice, okay, right now, but I started writing it, and then I got distracted, and I'm also writing a children's book at the same time.
Oh, boy.
So I think the children's book is almost done, so that's going to happen first. And then probably the sacred herbs of solstice or Yule. I'll be working on that this fall and winter, most likely. Yeah, I'm always working on something.
I know. And that pleases me, because I love your books. So, you know, at least you're making me happy. You're going to work your fingers to the bone, but I do appreciate it.
Oh, well, thank you.
All right. So we're leaving, but I think I'm going to leave everybody with a quick Beltane blessing. May nature inspire you, may love surround you, may spirit protect you, and may you manifest your heart's desires. So mote it be. And until next time, everybody, blessed be, and merry meet again. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited.